This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
The world doesn't need another sports show. It needs an awesome sports show. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. Neil, the boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour this fine morning. It's very chilly outside, leaving the Nobleton area this morning at 1 degree. And we have Lou Franceschetti in joining us today with Wally being away for the weekend. But we have Wally on the phone, so we're going to talk about a few things, hockey, baseball, football, all sorts of great things to come up. Louis, how are you this morning?
Morning, Wally. How are things here? It is a miserable morning out there.
Pretty cold, eh? Felt like snow this morning. Wally, what's the weather like where you are? Wally, are you there?
Yeah, I lost a signal. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, good. I just a little bit of a lost signal. I just lost the last 5 or 6 seconds. Last I heard was we're going to talk a little bit about hockey, a little bit about baseball. And good morning, Lou. How are you, sir?
Mr. Riggerbaum, congratulations again. A great, great effort by and demonstration of the running game by your Fighting Irish.
Yeah, thank you very much for the support, Lou. And since we're on the topic of college football, why don't we chat about that for a couple of minutes? I'm starting to get excited. You Alabama guys, you're so used to success all the time that it becomes an afterthought for you guys. But certainly, Fighting Irish fans are excited. Big win yesterday. We've got a Heisman Trophy candidate in Josh Adams. There is a path to the college football playoff for the Fighting Irish. If they can get past Wake Forest this Saturday, Wake Forest certainly could play a spoiler role. But then the big game's going to be Miami in a couple of weeks. So all the Fighting Irish fans out there are certainly excited about that. And one thing I do want to get. There was another fantastic college football game yesterday. I don't know if you saw it, Lou or Naz, but
Penn State, Ohio State.
What a game that was! I was disappointed because I wanted to see Penn State continue the run. They were number two in the nation, and what an incredible game! That's why people love college football. There's so many great comebacks. JT Barrett, 33 of 38. Completed his last 16 passes. Only downside to that game, I will say, Lou, and those Ohio State uniforms are plug ugly.
Thank God they're only using those for one game.
I don't know who gave them the consultation on those uniforms. I think the ones that Burt Reynolds wore in the longest yard were actually better looking than those ones.
That's enough of Notre Dame for let's talk about Alabama playing LSU next weekend.
And you're down to see that one now.
Yeah, I'll be down there to watch that one, yep.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's always been tough for me in studio having to go toe-to-toe with you Alabama guys. So, I've always said, Lou, you got to call a spade a spade. Alabama's program's at a different level than everybody else, and it has been. Certainly during much of the Saban era down there in Alabama. But you know what? College football is what it is. Upsets always happen. And LSU's a rivalry game for Alabama. But it's gonna take a monumental performance and a little bit of a letdown for Alabama to lose at any point in time.
Wally, I was told one thing when I was a kid. Everybody ties their shoes the same way. So I'm not counting Alabama being number one at the end of the year. They're going to go through Georgia. Georgia had a hell of a game yesterday. I know a couple of teams dropped out of the top four, But there are teams out there that probably scare the bejesus out of Alabama right now, and you're looking at probably Clemson, Ohio State, and even Georgia and Notre Dame right now are probably four teams that that really, at this stage of the season, that Alabama doesn't want to play.
And you know, I want to throw another one into the mix. Don't count Penn State out yet. They had a letdown in the fourth quarter yesterday in Columbus. It was a game I thought they had in hand against a very good, very, very good Ohio State team in the shoe down in Columbus. So don't count Penn State out yet. It's not over for them.
Well, you have to have all the marbles fall in the right place or the stars aligned, because now with Ohio State, I think they've got the advantage by beating Penn State. They're probably going to have to go up against Wisconsin in the SEC or the Big 12 championship game there, and I'm not sure if there's going to be two teams representing the Big 12 in the Final Four. So let's keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah, you might be right. I mean, there's a lot of teams that still have a roadmap to the Final Four, and you know, right now, I mean, what's the Horned Dogs lost yesterday?
Yeah, I think they're done because they still have to go through Oklahoma.
Yeah. So there's at least, you know, 8, 9, 10 teams that are still in the thick of it. So now November gets interested in college football. We get into the conference finals, conference playdowns, and, you know, rivalry matches. So it's college football's at this time of year is always, I always look forward to Saturday afternoons watching some great, great college football games down in the States.
Wally, anyway, I want to get to the World Series and talk about Houston and playing against the Dodgers.
Yeah.
I want to bring up a suspension that took place, and I want you to comment on both of you guys. Gurriel was suspended for 5 games at the beginning of next year with the racial gesture he made towards Darvish from the Dodgers.
Lou, I'll let you take a crack at that one first.
I think it was an inappropriate gesture by Gurriel. He was probably caught up in the heat of the moment, but I think it was the 5-game suspension at the beginning of next year is justified. You really can't take him out of the game right now because of where they are. You're making the other 24 guys pay the penalty for something really stupid that he did. And we all do stupid things when we're caught up in emotions. You look even at the Doc Peterson home run last night as Musgrove is staring him down, going around the bases. It could be a little bit extravagant. It was a great time of the game, the 9th inning. I want to see if there's any ramifications if Musgrove ever goes up against Peterson again in the next couple of games.
I got a little bit of it's one of those things, you know what, I think about it, then 20 seconds later, you know, I can argue this one both sides of the fence, but I'm gonna argue it this way. This is the way it first came to me. This is my first reaction to it. It's 2017. Guys, I mean, you know, I don't know what he was thinking. Obviously, you, whatever you want to call it, a lapse in judgment, lapse in attention, he's got to know, you know, every single player in every single professional sports has to know when they leave that dressing room door, every single thing that they do from that moment till the game's over, until they go back in the dressing room, every single thing they do, somebody's going to see it. It's going to be on camera. There's 50,000 iPhones there. Cameras are everywhere. So, you know what? He obviously wasn't thinking it through. But there's in this day and age, that is unacceptable. You know what? And I could say in this day and age, in any day and age, it was unacceptable. But you know what? We've evolved as a society, and we just don't tolerate this anymore. It's just intolerable, and you have to be... and you have to accept consequences for your actions. So,
yeah, I personally think that
I would have done. Okay, I can see the argument. You're penalizing your teammates. You know what? That's just too bad. You know what? Teammates. You know what? You got to accept the consequences of what your teammates do, and that's a lesson learned. Would I have given him? I probably, thinking it out loud right now, I'd probably give him a one-game suspension in the World Series and tack on another five. You know, just to ignore it now and say, okay, you know what? It's the World Series. It's different, whatever. My gut tells me there should have been some immediate consequence to his action. One game, and then tack another five games on at the beginning of the next year.
I agree. There should have been a game, for sure. And I think that's I think that's going to be the turning point of the series. I don't think Houston's coming back. I think LA's going to win the World Series now.
You know, the bottom line on these things is, you know, is it an isolated incident? Yes and no. It doesn't happen every game. It doesn't happen every month. But Major League Baseball has had, what, two or three or four of these in the last couple of years? You know what? You've got to send a message out. You know what? You know what? You do it in the World Series, you're going to miss a World Series game.
Is it me? Do I see more bat flips going on and that it's okay now to do it? It looks to me like everybody's bat flipping up there, too.
And to defend the player a little bit, okay? I mean, he. You know, I read some of the reports. I read some of his comments afterwards. He seemed genuinely sorry for what he did. And if he is, and he made an effort to try and apologize to you, Darvish, I don't know if you accepted the overture yet. I mean, he may or may not. He seemed genuine that he wanted to apologize for it afterwards, and it may have been out of character for him. He obviously regrets it. That's great. But at the end of the day, we're all responsible for our actions, and we all understand that there's consequences to what we do. And you can apologize all you want. That's fine, and that's great, and we encourage that. But at the end of the day, in today's world, that's completely and utterly unacceptable.
Well, you're absolutely right. Well, and I think you, Darvish, has done the right thing, taking the high road towards this. He's going to let his actions speak for himself. The thing that Naz just brought up regarding the bat flip, you look at society now, it is no matter whether it's the first inning, the first pitch, the ninth inning, the last pitch, everybody wants to mock everybody. And I think this series... UL Puig is the probably the worst guy about it by sticking his tongue out, dropping his hat, and showing his blue hair, making a valiant effort to grab the ball out in right field and then throwing his glove down and then recovering it. It is what it is. You've got to take it in stride, and it's more or less it's like one player showing up the other by sticking his tongue out after hits a home run, or another guy does the bat flip, and I hate to say it, but Jose was the beginning of all of it. And the unfortunate thing was, is Jose flipped the bat towards the Texas Ranger bench instead of flipping it towards his own bench.
I guess what we forget in Toronto is, you know, Lou, you played professional sports. There were hot dogs in your day too. It's not just a recent phenomenon. You know that.
We did it at an appropriate time. We didn't do it after the first goal.
I get it, but you guys tended, you know, and in your day, if somebody disrespected either the game or another player, you guys had a way of handling that stuff that, you know, in today's world, unfortunately, how you guys handled it back in those days isn't necessarily encouraged anymore. And I agree to you. I think there's a greater level of disrespect. You know, what we used to call it in our day, hot dogging,
yeah,
however you want to call it. You know, Jose, let's be fair, Lou, Jose Bautista didn't start that. His was a reaction to
eighth inning, three-run homer, and then they just come back bad play.
And I appreciate in Toronto, we have a different perspective about that particular play than they do in other cities. Obviously not, you know, it's not a secret. Jose Bautista is not loved in most other baseball cities around North America for a lot of different reasons. And you could, you know, and that could be attitude. It could be that particular incident. In Toronto, because we were the beneficiary of that particular play, we obviously aren't as critical about it. But you are, Lou, and you're representing a view of how other people perceive it in other major league cities, right?
Well, I listened to Buck Martinez last night, and he went directly to the Musgrove to the Doc Peterson thing, and he said he came out and said it, that in his heyday, in the old era, the players would have taken care of that right away. You know that if you did that to a Bob Gibson, a Nolan Ryan, a Sandy Koufax, all these hard throwers,
are you kidding me?
They would not have got out of that stadium alive.
You would never have done that to Nolan Ryan. Are you crazy?
Right? That first pitch the next time would have been right under your chin. And he said, the next one's going to be hit, is going to be hitting your chin.
Yeah. But the interesting thing about baseball, Naz and Lou, and, you know, interesting your comments on it. The interesting thing about baseball and you know, hockey has changed. Hockey used to be the sport that everybody used to criticize as having all the hooligans and all the bench-clearing brawls and all the fights and all that nonsense. We don't have that in hockey anymore. But baseball's got more bench-clearing brawls than in 1 year than we probably saw in the first 10 years that we used to watch baseball. Interesting your take on that. There's a lot more bench-clearing and nonsense in baseball than there ever used to be.
Well, I think that's a topic for another day, Wally. Don't get me going on that, because you know what I feel about baseball players compared to hockey players, huh? They'll all stand behind each other.
Lou, the hockey players have gotten soft, and the baseball players are going around every time.
That's because the linesman standing in the way.
Every time there's a little slight, you look at somebody the wrong way in baseball now, and you know 50 guys charge the mound. Things have certainly changed in that sport.
Hey, how many times did you, like with this year, the direction that they're going with the slashing penalties? Do you think those are slashes this year? We should slow them slashes from 20 years ago.
Well, we're gonna find out pretty soon. Yeah. Wally, we got to go to break, but we have Dennis Moroque, who's waiting on hand to be on our show today this morning, and we're gonna get back to you after the interview with Moroque and have you in the last 10 minutes, okay? Can you do that, Wally?
I will sure do.
Because there's a few things I want to bring up that we weren't able to talk about. But
Just get Sebastian to call me back in the break.
Okay, very good. So we're
going to talk to you later.
Thanks. We're going to go to break and come back with Dennis Moroque.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville brought back the large five-topping pizza special for just $13.99 for a limited time. I'm whispering because the last time Pizzaville brought back this special, there was pandemonium in the streets, pushing, shoving, biting. So order now and order often, and hopefully you won't have any bite marks when this is over. Call Pizzaville for the large five-topping pizza special at £3636 from your cell phone. Shh.
There's an old saying, entrepreneurship doesn't build character, it reveals character. Entrepreneurs learn to trust a person by trusting people. The law firm Rigabon Carly understands this. They know all about entrepreneurs because they work for them. Every day, they've earned their trust. They know that when it comes to meeting the legal and business needs of entrepreneurs, good enough is not enough. Rigabon Carly, the intelligent choice.
Steel's Paint in Woodbridge, an enormous 20,000 square foot superstore that carries nothing but the best. Superior staff, superior advice, superior selection, superior everything. When you have a really tough job to do, they can knock it down to size. They'll show you how to get it done right, and because they only sell the best of everything, you'll get it done to last. That means superior satisfaction. Steel's Paint, 4190 Steel's Avenue West in Woodbridge, the best.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity in Vaughan. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the No. 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
There are two ways to argue sports with these guys, and none of them work. The boys are back, the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We have on the line former Washington Capitol and a few other teams, but predominantly with the Capitals. I mean, the Minnesota North Stars and a few
California Golden Seals.
Denny was around. Dennis Marook. Good morning, Dennis. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning, guys. How are you guys doing?
Pee-wee, good morning.
We got a teammate of yours, Lou Franceschetti.
Oh, my Lord. I mean, is he shut up or what? Talks all the time.
I had a good teacher.
Words in there or what?
I've had a good teacher, Pee-wee.
You're a good man. You're a good man, Louie.
Dennis, there's a book out about you.
Right.
Briefly tell me about the book and what it's all about.
How much time I got?
You got lots of time. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I met a fellow a few years ago, and we started talking about stories. And then he introduced me to Ken Reed, who everybody knows Ken Reed on Sportsnet channel there. And we started talking a little bit more about things. He said, this would be a good book. And I go, no, I don't want to do a book. And no, he says, yeah, let's talk some more. So instead of a lunch, 1 hour, we end up talking for about 5.5 hours, and then we met again, and then we went again forward with it. So we talked basically a lot. The autobiography is a little different than any other ones because of. I'm a James Patterson book reader. I read a lot of his books and all short chapters, and that's how I wanted to do this book, 60 years old, 60 goals, and, 60 chapters, and it worked out pretty good. And it's about ups and downs in life, things that us players during our time were told that a lot of doors are going to be open. If you didn't stay involved with hockey, there was very few doors. So it was a struggle for many years regarding post-career, and you know, it took some time, and I went really south that a few years there, and things were pretty bad. So it's a book about, it's a whirlwind. It starts off with the first chapter, me being a captain on a 160-foot cruise ship in the Gulf, going to service the oil rigs. With Devon Energy, and then we just kind of tie in everything else after that. So Ken did a great job. We worked together on it, and so far, a lot of reviews, and everybody seems to like it.
Dennis, you started off your minor hockey career. What I noticed was that you were with Markham Waxers, and then there was a trade with the Marlies. Briefly describe that, because Mark Howe ended up going to Marlies, and right. London got you, right. And you weren't happy. You didn't want to report at first.
If Louis knows that, I mean, when you grow up in Toronto, the top teams were the Marlies. I played a minor band of Marlies, and then they moved. Then it goes right up to Markham, same chain, and then you go play for the Marlies. Well, guess where the Marlies played? Played at Maple Leaf Gardens, Sunday, 2 o'clock, and practice there at times, and saw the pro players, and you know, I was playing lacrosse, and I got a phone call. I just won the scoring championship, Junior B, with Markham Waxers, Mark Howe was drafted by London Knights, midget age, and Marty Howe was already playing for the Marlies. I had played 8 games with the Marlies while I was with the Waxers, and you know, I got a phone call from Frank Vanella, GM, and said, can we meet? And I was ready to go to a lacrosse game, and so we met at a gas station. I get out of my car, and go into his car, and he looked at me, and he said, how you doing? I said, fine, ready to go to my game. And he goes, well, I just got some news for you. We traded to London. And I said, what? And I kind of started crying a little bit, and I said, well, I'm not going. I'm staying in Toronto. I'm not leaving my family. I'm not leaving my friends. And you make another trade. Well, nothing really happened, materialized. Bill Long and came down to visit Toronto and all that kind of stuff. So I just leave the door, and 2 weeks before camp, I decided to go. I talked to my older sister, and she said, man, go try it. You know, if you like it, stay. If not, you can come right home. And I ended up going, had training camp, and I liked it. So that was the 3 years. It was a trade. Bill Long, first of all, Frank Vanella offered Bruce Boudreau, and Bill Long said no. He wanted myself and another player. We ended up getting myself, Larry Goodenough, and Steve Langdon in the trade. The three of them, and we went to London and had some pretty good years. But that's how that whole thing started. And I did not want to go. I did not want to leave Toronto. I think every boy playing up, playing youth hockey and getting a chance to play for the Marlies was a big thing.
Yeah, Pee-wee, I guess a lot of people don't realize that back then there really wasn't an OHL draft. I think
No. You
were a protected player within a 50-mile radius of the city, and that's why the Marlies always had those powerhouses, because they would really take the best players out of the city and put them on their protected list. And I can see why, being a 16-year-old wanting to leave Toronto, nobody wants to leave their home at 16, especially back then, because it was really...
You know, you're going into a home, you don't know anybody. You put in a billet, you don't know anybody. You don't know nobody in the city. It's tough. It's tough to go to school. It was really, really a frustrating situation. And, yeah, you're right, Louis. You know, they had that opportunity. I was playing in Neha, Northern Etobicoke, and I was a pretty good player. And I got picked up by the Marlies. The manager came out and says, "Would you like playing for the Toronto Marlies?" Well, that was great because they gave us equipment too, and so that saved my parents a lot of money. So that was pretty nice too.
You mentioned about your dad a bit, and describe your father to us, please.
My father was a very quiet man, but very supportive. And right now he's struggling. He's 93 years old. I saw him the other day, and as a matter of fact, my sister came in from Halifax, went to see him. They'll get together, the family, on Monday. But, he's on a downhill slope. But he's had a wonderful year. My mom was the one that talked a lot. But my dad was a supportive one. He'd always be there drive myself to the game. They always came when I played in London. They missed the only games they missed were up in Sault Ste. Marie and Sudbury. Other than that, they were driving through the storm, the sleet, London, Kitchener, Oshawa, all over. While I was playing, I think that saved and helped me out, knowing that they were there and very supportive.
Dennis, you were drafted by the California Golden Seals. Did you wear the white skates?
Who were they?
Who are they? Remember the white skates. Did you ever wear the white skates?
No, I didn't wear the white skates. Thank God. No, they were terrible. And the yellow and green, too. We had one of the best-looking colors. We had that Pacific blue that in San Jose has, but that was our main color. I call it teal blue, Pacific blue, and the gold or yellow gold and the white. A lot of people like that jersey. I get Seals hats made up and North Star hats made up and Washington Capitol. A lot of people want the Seals hats. And that's kind of cute. But, it was a start for me. I mean, I got drafted by California. And as Lou knows, anytime you get an opportunity to play in the National Hockey League and get drafted it's a great honor.
Dennis, let's go back to we were members of the Washington Capitals, obviously.
Right.
I was up and down from the minors. Let's go back to your 61-goal season with the Caps that year. I think they were, you could pretty well tell that they were on the rise with Gary Green coming in as a coach and the players going in the right direction, because that was probably one of the most misfit organizations back in the mid-70s from my experience, and I bet you from yours when you first got there.
Right.
Your highs and lows from that year, obviously your 61 goals, but little things that more or less put you in the elite top five, top 10 players of the National Hockey League at that time.
Well, thanks, Lori. We all had a job to do, right? And, getting in the NHL in California, moving to Cleveland Barons 2 years there, we didn't get a paycheck for a month. They told us that we were going to be put in a draft because we weren't going to play a game, and we can talk about that. We did end up playing, and then I was two teams merged, Cleveland, Minnesota, and I got traded to Washington Capitals for a first round pick. And during that time, we had a Save the Cavs campaign to try and save that team, and we did. And then we had a couple of bad years, and then they made that big trade, right, with Rod Langway, Brian Engloom, Doug Jarvis, Craig Laughlin. And we had to give up two good players, Ryan Walter and Rick Green. But that kind of changed everything there for the team. The year I had 60 goals, and the year before that I had 50, and I had 60 and 76 assists that year. It's pretty hot in a pretty good company with Gretzky and Stastny and Bossy and all those guys. And So it was kind of an honor, but you still want, you know, as we all know, the way that we wanted to win the Stanley Cup, and it was the first time we got in the playoffs, and we had to go against the Islanders, and we just didn't have enough. They were a powerful, powerful team. But, you know, it was just a struggle the first 4 or 5 years of franchises that were not successful, and I got really frustrated about, well, what is this NHL all about? And so then they started getting better and better, and Washington started drafting. So, you know, I think it's the whole thing is when you get there, you don't want to lose that job because it is the you know, one of the best leagues in professional sports. The game is a great game, and you know, you got somebody coming right over your shoulder if you don't do well. So I just had to keep playing hard. I was a little guy that was told too small and ended up playing 14 years. So I just kept plugging away and hoping that one day a team would either draft, pick me up or whatever, and I get a chance to win a Stanley Cup. But that never happened. I'm one of a lot of guys who've done that.
I just want to point out to the listeners, that year, Dennis, you scored 60 goals, 76 assists for 136 right. points. Mm-hmm. You yeah. were third in goals behind Wayne Gretzky and Mike Bossy. You were sixth in assists behind Stastny, Savard, Bossy, and Trotsky.
Not a bad group, eh?
Yeah, that's okay. Pretty good. And points, total points, Gretzky, Bossy, and Stastny, and then Marek. That's incredible.
Yeah, I look at, you look at that top, you look at the guys below me, Marcel Dion, Dennis Savard, Yari Curry, Dino Cicerelli, Bobby Smith. Yeah, you get out, you down the line, and you know, it's just like, here's this little guy from Rexdale, Ontario, Dennis Merck, and they're going, who? Who's this guy? You know? So, yeah, Gretzky had a great year. I mean, he had 92 goals, and I think that year I had great line mates. We had a good line on Louis will know that, but I played with Ryan Walter and Chris Valentine, and Brian Murray kept us together all year, even though we had some games we didn't produce or whatever. And we worked together on a power play. Usually you have a unit in the power play, it's a couple guys mix up on lines. We stayed together, and it really, really gelled. And, you know, when you look at the top lines in the league, they don't move around. They stay together, and they're successful. And that's what happened with us in Washington. So, you know, I have to compliment those guys because you can't do it alone.
Yeah, people don't realize that we had also Mike Gardner on that team that year. And I don't think you were line mates. Uh-huh. And from mentioning the two names there, Ryan Walter and Chris Valentine, Ryan Walter was just a heart and soul type player. And Chris Valentine, I think most of the players nowadays can probably skate faster backwards than Chris can forward.
So right.
But Chris had a set of hands. He has just come from the Quebec League and scored 150 points. He was on the half board, and he was just unbelievable in the offensive end. It's just unfortunate that back then, you know, he couldn't put the other parts of the games to stick around.
Right. Right.
But we did have a good nucleus there of players to build off of.
Right, exactly, Logan.
Dennis, there was that year, Gary Green started the year, I believe, and he was ended up 1-12, got fired. Roger Crozier came in for one game. And then the coaching debut of Brian Murray started when you played. Describe Brian Murray, and Louis always talked very highly of Brian, but describe Brian Murray as a coach.
I guess Brian Murray lets you do your thing. Everybody had a certain talent, and he was able to coach that player and make that player better. I think a big part of my success has to be because of Brian Murray. I got opportunities to go out and as a power play, and you know, I didn't do penalty killing. That was not my job. And my job was to score goals, make plays, and other guys had their jobs. Checking line and all that, and that's what he was able to really get the best out of each player, what they were and what they could give to the team. Certainly, and I think that's I'll tell you one little story. I played with Kenny Houston and Doug Jarvis at left wing, and Kenny Houston, what we're losing 6-1, and Doc is his nickname, Kenny Houston, and he said, if I get another goal at 25, I think he said it was like a $10,000 bonus. And so I said, if I got a 2-on-1 with you, just be ready because I'm going to throw it over to you. Well, exactly what happened. He scored a goal. We added him when he scored a goal. We work on cheering to the bench, right? Screaming. It's like we won, I guess, won the Stanley Cup or won the playoff or whatever. And Brian Murray looked at, I've never seen him look so sour because we were losing 6-2. But we, you know, we were just, he goes, what are you guys so excited about? And he goes, yeah, we just won a bonus for Kenny. But it was kind of a cute, it's a good little story. And but Brian, you know, God rest his soul, and he was a great man and had a lot to do with hockey and the family. But he just he gave us the opportunity to be who we were, and our talent out in the ice. And I'm talking not just myself. Louis, you can agree with all the other players too, that, you know, there's guys that, you know, coming up and down in the minors a lot from Hershey, and things just where it was got unsettled, and he was trying to find a group of players that could gel together, and he gave a lot of players a chance there that a lot of people right now, if you mentioned some of the names, would not know.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because Brian Murray, more or less, I got the greatest respect for him.
Right.
He put players in positions to succeed, not to fail. And I remember when I was with him the first year that I met him, I'd gone the first, we just finished winning the Calder Cup the year before, and we're coming in and we're all cocky because we thought we were going to get a shot with the Washington Capitals. When I come in and I don't score a goal in my first 27 games, and for sure I thought I was going to end up in the Colonial Hockey League, which is one step below the American League that year. I ended up scoring 32 goals that year. So he had enough confidence in me and putting me in the proper position. But then when I got called up, he knew my offensive production in the minor leagues, but he also knew what I could add in the National League. And I says, and he put me in situations that I could not fail. He put me on a line with Bobby Carpenter and Mike Gartner at the time, and I just couldn't fit in. So what he did, he says, okay, Lou, you got to go a different direction. Unless you want to go down to the minors, you got to go down to the third and fourth line and work your ass off, if I can say that word.
Right.
But I changed my game according to Beep. For me to succeed, to make the team a lot better. And that's where I became the player that I was known to be, a guy that caused a little bit of emotion. But again, Brian put me in a situation to succeed, and then whenever he needed a winger to play on that first or second line, I could do it for three or four games. I just couldn't do it over a span of 80 games. But, you know, he's done so much. You look at what he did in Florida, you look at what he did in Anaheim, and look what he did in Ottawa. It's just phenomenal. And the thing with Brian, he communicates with everybody.
Louis, you know, you're exactly right, but I think that you got to pat yourself on the back for the way you know, a lot of players will accept that, and that different role, different situation, and then a lot of players, they can't accept that, and then their game just falters, and guess where they end up? They go back down to the minors, or they go, like, they're traded or let go. So, Louis, pat yourself on the back, because you did a wonderful job there in Washington and the NHL, so... You know, you weren't a goal scorer, but you were a strong checker, and you played the role that you had to play, and you learned it quickly, because otherwise you wouldn't have stayed.
Maybe it's time to write a book about Louis, eh?
Definitely.
That'd be a beauty, too.
He'll just talk about baseball.
Yeah, that's it. Let's talk about baseball.
I can't beat him on that. He knows everything about baseball.
He's a Yankee fan. Oh, wow.
Well, I'm a Blue Jay fan, but I'm also a Yankee fan, too. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So. The title of the book is The Unforgettable Story of Hockey's Forgotten 60-Goal Man, Dennis Marouk.
Yes.
Where can we get this book?
You can get this book at Amazon.ca and Amazon.com in the States. It's in all the stores and in chapters. It's pretty much all over. I know it's in Winnipeg. I did an interview the other day. They've got the stores there. So it's a great read, a great message. My personal things are in there. But as I said earlier, a lot of people enjoy the book. And it's a message about post-career. I mean, players, and you got to respect who loves you, and you got to respect yourself, and you got to realize that, there's kids and people out there that are struggling in their life, and and when you're having a bad day, just think of them, and then you move on. Forget about it and move on, and pick the pieces up in yourself. But the message is just to, take care of yourself, respect who loves you, and respect yourself.
Dennis, on the lighter side of things here, you had probably the greatest Fu Manchu restaurant in all of sports and all of history. How did that come about, and how come you let it grow as bad as you did?
How come I let what? Did my Fu Manchu grow?
Yeah.
it's in the story. It's in the book. I and it's a baseball player. I was watching TV, and there's this pitcher, a relief pitcher, Kansas City Royals, Al Habrowski.
Habrowski.
Yeah. Remember him, the mad Hungarian.
Yeah. The taunt on the mound.
That pitcher mound and stomping, going crazy. And I go, and then I see he's got the Fu Manchu. I go, that's me. I gotta keep that. And that's how it's in the book, and that's how I did. And that's just, people say I look tough and gruff, and I know, Louie, you can attest to that I didn't back down from anybody. I hit and did all that stuff because I was beaten up. I was abused. I wasn't a fighter. I had a few guys behind my back helping me out, like Mr. Willie Platt and a few other guys. But, I've had my fights and stuff like that, but my job was to produce, but you still had to hit. Our game during that time was survival. And Louis will agree with that, and especially for me. But today it's more wide open.
Yeah, we had to take care of ourselves back then. Plus, you weren't known as an angel either. That's why they call you a little rat.
Thanks, Louis. No, I wasn't. No way. And I learned that. I had all those great points and great, most valuable player award and London Knights with the OHL and all that. But I met after the Dave Hutchinson's first year, and we had a golf tournament in London, and we sat down, and I just asked him, what's it like in the NHL? And he says, it's just tough, and it's real hard. You got to play hard. And I said, well, I'm going. He says, you can score goals, you can make plays, you can do all that, but you got to be a prick out there.
Yeah.
And I go, okay, excuse my expression, but that's exactly what he said. And I did that. I went to camp. I was hitting guys on my own team, and the coaches are going, well, who is this Maroon kid, And, he's hitting, and that's what I had to do. And I continued doing that through my whole career, and it gave me respect. It gave me room to create things. And one day I'm facing off against Mr. Wayne Gretzky, and he looked at me and he goes, you don't need to do that hitting or fighting just because you got your playmaker, you can score. You don't need to hit. And I looked at him and I said, well, are you going to start fighting now?
Yeah, Wayne Gretzky fight.
I changed my game, and he certainly wasn't going to change his game. So that got me there. That helped me, and that's where it was. So thanks for the nice compliments too, Louis.
Dennis, thanks very much for the interview. It was a great time, and hopefully you had a great time with us. And Ken Reed's a real professional. I know Ken. He's quite the guy. Yeah. You got the right guy writing the book, that's for sure.
Yeah, this book wouldn't have been come out like it was if it wasn't for Ken Reed. We worked together, but we kind of finalized everything and went at each other's heads, but there's no way this book would have been written the way it was with the way he did it.
Thanks, Dennis, and have a good day, okay?
Okay, Louie, you too.
Pee-wee, take care of yourself. Say hi to everybody for me.
Bye-bye.
That was Dennis Marouk, the unforgotten 60-goal man. Really unforgotten. People don't realize he was quite a goal scorer.
He was a great offensive player. He played, back then, you didn't have to play all ends of the ice, but around the net, it was a survival game, especially as small as he was and as big as some of the defensemen were. It's not like nowadays where you're not allowed to hit anybody. You had a two-hander coming across your back, and he got in and out and out of trouble, and he stood there and took his took the crap that he had to score all the goals. Like, he wasn't a goal, 60 goals. You'd think that most of the goals were scored on the perimeter, not with Dennis. He had the ones off his rear end, but he stuck his nose in there, and I think that's what a lot of players respected about him around the whole league.
I wonder how many guys how many goals he'd score in today's hockey. He'd be he'd be up there like with Kucherov, I think, something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, especially the way the game has gone and you expand the blue lines. He was just a great offensive player.
We're going to go to a break, and we'll be back after the commercial break.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville realised that people may not know how many different kinds of ponzos Pizzaville makes. You can go Italian if you like a sausage. You can go Hawaiian if you like ham and pineapple. And you can go Canadian if you like bacon, beer and hockey. We can build a ponzo that speaks your language, no matter where you are from. Call Pizzaville at 736-3636 or visit pizzaville.ca.
At Titanium Logistics, we believe that choosing the right shipping company comes down to two issues, price and cost. Most prices are competitive. We'll likely save you money too. But the cost of choosing the wrong company to service your cross-border freight to and from the U.S. and Mexico can be extraordinary. If it's not where it should be, when it should be, that bargain price, worthless. Titanium Logistics. On time, on budget. Call 905-266-3014. Ask for Blair Downey.
At 20,000 square feet, Steeles Paint in Woodbridge is Canada's largest independent paint store. Big deal, right? Big deal, yes. The best brands, the best staff, the best advice, the best of everything. From color matching to brand selection, whether you're a pro or a DIYer, we'll look after you from the minute you walk in to the minute you walk in a second time as a completely satisfied customer. Big store, big deal, bigger satisfaction. Simple. Steeles Paint, 4190 Steeles Avenue West in Woodbridge.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity and Vaughan. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the No. 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
The Naz and Wally Sports Hour is a paid program. Opinions expressed on the show are those of Naz and Wally and their guests.
From face-offs to playoffs, field goals to own goals, you're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, and we have Wally back on the air. Wally, did you hear any of the Murica interview?
I heard most of it. Great interview, guys. That was really, really well done. Dennis Marouk, you know, Naz, you remember you and I spent a lot of time in junior A rinks in the mid-70s in our younger days, and some of the rinks he talked about, Oshawa, you know, London, Kitchener, Maple Leaf Gardens in those days, the Hamilton Barn. We spent a little bit of time, and then he brought back great memories about Dennis Marouk. Certainly, they talk about him as being the forgotten. You and I both remember how good of a player he was. He's certainly, in my mind, not forgotten. And you brought up some really fascinating stats that I had forgotten. As good work,
incredible.
He was right up there with the top players in the game. 136 points. Maybe a lot of people have forgotten that, and it's good that you dug those stats up and reminded me and a lot of our listeners how a really good player Dennis Marouk was. So, yeah, it was Lou Naz, great interview. It was certainly a pleasure listening to it.
So are you going to end up writing the book for Louis here or what?
Louis and I are going to have a discussion this week. Lou, maybe there is a book residing within you. So we're gonna chat about that. Maybe we will do the Lou Franceschetti story.
Okay.
All kidding aside, might actually be pretty interesting.
Yeah, it probably would be.
And on the other topic, Al Hrabowski, talk about a name from the past.
Yep.
You know what? We got to do a show on the best mustaches in professional sports, and Al Hrabowski, the Mad Hungarian. I mean, I hadn't heard that name in years. And Dennis Marouk had a great one. Lanny McDonald. So,
Rolly Fingers.
Goose Gossage, guys.
So certainly a topic for another
Sparky day. Lyle.
Topic for another day.
We want to talk about two things to close the show. One is we didn't talk about the Girardi parting the ways with the Yankees. Louis, what do you think of that?
I just think it was about time for him to part ways. I know he had some, not some family issues, but he had to do a lot of talking with his family. His boy is in his senior year in high school right now, and he wants to watch him and help him succeed in the career that he wants to choose. There was a lot of bonehead plays that I'd like to say that he made, I'd say probably from July on. But the biggest one was probably the game against Cleveland. And again, it's neither here or there. It was just a situation where I guess he didn't trust his back catcher, Gary Gary Sanchez and what the call was going to be, and it more or less it put everybody on the public eye what happened there, and his players came back and won that series. They should have won it in four, and if you look back at even the Houston series, I think they should have beaten Houston, especially with the relay after in a 2-1 game. But again, maybe he's just worn out his own welcome. The media, it is a media circus out there, and it is New York. And you, after 10 years, you missed the playoffs, 4 years? Yeah, five playoff seasons, and you did win the championship in 2009.
I think he's in the top five of managers in the league. He did a pretty good job with the Yankees.
He did.
So, yeah. Wally, what do you think?
I want to ask you. Yeah, Louis, you're closer to the Yankees than obviously Naz and I are. You follow them. It smacks to me that, first of all, I thought that I have a different take on it than you do, Lou. I thought the Yankees overachieved.
They
at
did
at the end, and they came within one game of making the World Series. And if you had to push that theory forward at the beginning of the year or in May or June, and if somebody would have suggested that the Yankees would have almost made the World Series, I think you wouldn't have got very far with that argument. So that, to me, it smacks that the Girardi decision was made a long time ago. It was that they made that decision earlier on in the year, and because it doesn't make sense to me that you make that decision based on how the Yankees performed in the last 2-3 months of the season.
You know, it probably was, and I think it was probably made once he got into a little bit of an altercation with Gary Sanchez, where he more or less benched him for a couple of games, because from my take, I think Gary is a great offensive catcher and a great offensive player, but he lacks the skill to be a great defensive catcher, and that was Joe Girardi's forte, and he couldn't really buy into it. He had some problem also communicating with the pitchers, and everybody knows it's a young man's game now. And I think Joe is a little bit old school. He's a son of an army general, and he probably ran that clubhouse with an iron fist. But with the youth coming in, and as good as the youth were, I think he had a tough time letting go of being an old school type of team. And now with the new guy coming in with the analytics and everything, they're just looking for a fresh face and probably a fresh voice.
Now I want to bring up another subject here, the Vegas team. Vegas is 8-1 out of the gate. I want to pose this question to you, and I thought about this. If you were an NHL team currently, would you like to be Vegas in the expansion draft and start your team over again with a salary cap and everything and build your team again? Look at the Buffalo Sabres. Do you think they would rather be an expansion team or the Buffalo Sabres? Louis?
You know, it's...
With the cap world.
In the cap world, it's just different times. Obviously, when the Sabres came in, even when the Washington Capitals came in, there wasn't really much to choose and pick. Now you're talking about having 32 teams and exposing so many players and, you know, contracts and a salary cap. And let's say this. Why don't they take six teams out? Make this a 26-team league. Imagine how good that league's going to be.
Lou, let's get serious, okay? They're not going to take
I know that, but I'm just saying, imagine
the
if
they did
that.
The reason why I brought this up is I think Vegas is going to make the playoffs. I think they're...
You know what, guys? Okay, finish.
No, hear me out. Wally, they have a cap. It's a cap. It's the cap situation. The cap wasn't there when the expansion of the other teams were there. There's a cap now.
Okay? Yeah, they're not burdened. They're not bogged down.
Exactly. They're not burdened with contracts. They can get all the good young players off of these other teams, one from each team, and start off brand new.
I agree. Naz, you make a very good point. It's a very astute point. I agree with you. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. And we got ahead of ourselves a little bit with the Toronto Maple Leafs, okay? You know, now they've come back a little bit to you know, they've taken a couple of steps backwards. The reality sets in. It's an 82-game schedule. I think we're getting a little carried away with the Las Vegas Knights. They're 8-1. to be quite frank with you, I haven't watched them play yet, so I don't even know what they've got on that team. I know they got Fleury in net, but you know he's injured now.
I've watched them play a few times, and they're pretty quick. Pretty quick team.
They're quick, and you know, give George McPhee a lot of credit. He sees the winds are blowing. Are they a playoff team? Man, would that ever be I'd be shocked. I'd be shocked that they.
Well, get your shock level up because it's going to happen.
Okay. You know what? Well, you know, but your point is, yeah, I think there's a lot of teams in the middle of the pack that if they could clear out their dead wood and start, you know, clear out a lot of, because what happens over time is you carry forward, and it's a very astute point, Naz, I give you credit. You're carrying a lot of dead wood, a lot of dead salaries that are accomplishing nothing.
Exactly.
The Toronto Maple Leafs are an example of that.
We got a signal from the producer, Sebastian, okay. Is saying cut, he's going to cut me off
okay,
here.
Okay, so. Guys, I know the drill.
Okay. Everybody, thanks, Louis, for coming in and joining us this morning, and you have a parting shot.
Thanks, Naz and Wally. It was a great pleasure talking to you this morning, and have a great time up in northern Michigan, where I know the golf courses are spectacular at this time of year.
Go Bills, go.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.